Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hits a second three of the half.
And you cannot give him any daylight.
Here comes Thompson.
Oh, my goodness.
Thompson, and it looked like Ibaka got a piece of it.
This is outstanding defensive play at both ends.
45-2. The only losses during the regular season to Boston and Minnesota. Here's Durant. He finally hits. Kevin Durant had missed on his last seven shots before that jumper.
Well, you knew it was going to be law of averages.
22 seconds remaining. They put pressure on. Westbrook out of the backcourt. And a travel is called. Or did he call a timeout? The Warrior bench was furious. They thought Westbrook was over and back. Or perhaps a travel.
It wasn't so much what happened in the last minute. It was what happened really throughout most of the second half. A lot of quick shots. Way too many quick shots. 5 minutes left in the game, and we're down four or whatever, and we were acting like we had 20 seconds left. 5 minutes is an eternity. We know how we have to play. We have to pass and move and create rhythm.
We got rushed a little bit, trying to go for the home run plays. Sometimes it works, and we need to have more composure to be able to slow it down and work those possessions. Got out of character a little bit. Something we'll learn from going forward.
Well, we scored 38 points in that third. Russell was catalyst, getting to the rim, finishing. We just followed that lead, and we just play hard on the defensive end. You hear it all the time, defense wins.
They change the lineups a lot throughout the game. Sometimes they have Green at the center, but I thought our bigs did a great job of knowing personnel, switching out, doing a great job of making a finish of our line.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Welcome to the Extravaganza once again on a Tuesday afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Thanks so much for being here. I am Bob France, and Jim Cushlin is here as well. Jim Cushlin won't be here for the entire show, however. Wow, there's a number of ways to take that studio audience applause there.
I didn't think I was that bad of a guy.
I don't know if they were cheering that you're here or if they were cheering that you're not going to be here very long.
I'm going to pretend it's the first one.
Yeah, it's really hard to say. We'll have to clarify that as we go. But welcome. We have so much to do today. We are loaded up with good guests to talk about all of the top news and sports stories of the day. That matter locally, if they are within our region of coverage, if you will, from Detroit to Toledo, all the way over to Cleveland. We're going to get all of those things, speaking specifically in Detroit of Tigers and the Brad Ausmus show. Cleveland, of course, starting in the Eastern Conference Finals. Finally, after sitting it's what seems like forever, waiting for the Miami and Toronto series to end. So we'll get into that. Nationally, of course, game one last night, Oklahoma City, just heard the great montage put together there by Jim Cushlin. That is a game changer. Is it time for another bold prediction? It just very well might be, and I will tell you and give you my thoughts on that as we go. Guest-wise, like I said, we are really loaded for bear. We are going to talk with a number of people on the NBA, including John Godis. And am I saying it right? Is it Godis or Goddess? Did you actually get it from him when you talked to him, Jim Cushlin?
No, I did get it from him.
Well, you're supposed to do that. That's part of the job, producer guy, is find out how the guest says his name when you don't know him. And the reason you don't know him, and I don't know him, is because he's from Toronto. He covers the Raptors up north of the border. And we're going to talk to him. He writes for RaptorsHQ.com, which is the SB Nation site for Toronto basketball. But John Godes, or Godis, and we'll clarify that sooner rather than later, I hope, will join us in about a half an hour. A little less, probably. I'm at about 3:35 to talk about this series from their perspective. Do they honestly think they can win? I was trolling him already, by the way, Kush, because once you booked this yesterday,
right?
He hit us up on Twitter and said, hey, I'll be on Sports Radio 106.5. That's our Twitter handle for those who don't know. I'll be on at Sports Radio 106.5 tomorrow afternoon. This is him writing yesterday to preview the Raps / Cavs. And I immediately responded, you mean Cavs / Raps. Top billing goes to the top seed and also to the defending Eastern Conference champion. You're not going to be coming into Ohio and declaring this the Raptors-Cavaliers series. I don't care where you're from. There's just some etiquette that has to be followed here. Would you agree?
to a degree, yeah. You should always list the higher seed first, I would imagine.
Absolutely, for crying out loud. Especially, and oh, by the way, I hit him again. Just because when I was promoting it, and you can follow us again on Twitter, as I was promoting some of the stuff I'm telling everyone on the air right now with respect to the guest lineup, I noticed the at Raptors HQ handle for the site that he writes for, of course, as well. And so I just clicked on it to see what they've got there. And the first thing they've got on the Raptors HQ Twitter feed is, again, talking about the excitement of the Raptors and Cavaliers series. I'm trying to see if I can pull it up here quickly enough to actually quote it. And I don't know if I can in time. But at any rate, it was a quick promotion of the series, obviously, and about how excited they are. And I quickly responded to them in much the same way. I said, don't get too excited, Raptor fans, because we don't expect you to be here very long. Maybe four. and I'm not going to predict a sweep, but I predicted that the Pistons would get a game, probably game three. You know, the old pattern, the old... formula that when one team badly outclasses another team and you don't want to outright predict a sweep, you say if the lower seed, the underdog, if that seed is to steal a game, it'll probably be in game number three, the first one back after falling down 0-2, first one back in their own home arena.
That's the only part of it I disagree with.
What's that?
Well, I'm actually more of the mindset that, if anything, it's going to be game four to avoid a sweep. Think even in the previous two Cavs series, those were actually the closest two games.
That didn't matter, though, did it?
No.
Because the team that is the favorite knows they're not going to try to, if they have a chance, if it's even close, which the Cavaliers proved, they are absolutely not letting them steal game four and having to play a whole nother one. The time to get them, traditionally has been in game one on your own floor, which means game three overall. Because that is where the highest excitement is. Because at that point, in any series,
2-1's a series. No matter what the seeds.
Well, but specifically 2-0, all that means is what? That the home team held serve.
Exactly.
You're supposed to win both on your floor, And so the mindset of the team that's losing remains no big deal. They're supposed to hold serve on their home floor, And guess what? We're going to win 2 on our home floor, and the mindset is confident. And positive. And you know what? Hey, they got done what they had to get done at their place. Now we're going to get done what we have to get done at ours. And I think that is absolutely reasonable. And now when they lose that first one on theirs and suddenly they haven't held serve on their home floor, well, guess what? Now the spirit is crushed a little bit, and that's when you go in there as the favorite. And you stomp on that ant with or kill it with a sledgehammer. We ain't going to game five back at our place and dragging this thing out anymore for another 48 minutes of wear and tear on our bodies. We're ending it now.
By the way, FYI, even if it does go five, Bob, yeah, which would be next Tuesday for game five,
right,
they already have set in stone the NBA finals dates. Even if it goes just five, forget the sweep, just five,
right,
that still would be 9 more days rest for the Cavs after that.
Yeah, and you know what? It, even if they got it done in four, it wouldn't matter. First of all, as you just pointed out, they have it set. But what I mean is I expect the Western Conference final to go much farther than four or five.
Oh,
or
I certainly do now.
Six. Yeah, so you know what I mean? So to be quite honest, yeah, here it is. I said, don't get too excited, Raptor fans. We don't expect this thing to last much longer than four. # go Cavs. We'll see if we can get a little thing going with it. But they're in for another long wait. Listen, the most dangerous time for me as a fan / analyst or whatever is oftentimes this one right here. Now, I'm not going to go out on a limb here and predict, the Cavs are really vulnerable tonight, because they had a long wait between Pistons and the end of the Pistons series and the start of the Hawks series. And a lot of people said, man, so I think at that time it was 7 or 8 days in between?
It was 7 on the first one. It was 8 on this one.
Nine. Today being the ninth day, yeah.
Right.
So, anyway, a lot of we talked about rust. And, you know, we had Rick Nolan on, who's going to be one of the other guests, by the way. And you know, he said, I picked them to win the first two games of the series. You know, Nolan and I agreed that if there's a game to be lost from the, you know, by the Cavaliers to the Hawks, we kind of said it would be the same thing that we thought if there was one to be lost against the Pistons, that it would be game three. However, he came on the air with me on the day of game one to preview the series and said, I'm just nervous right now because of the rust. They've been off for so long. The Hawks have been playing, and the Hawks are coming off an exciting Game 7 win. And, you know, this is one of those things that I feel nervous. It might be the trap, you know, the gotcha thing. You know, you're not ready. And, of course, it didn't matter. So I'm going to take the same route today and say a little concerned about 9 days off, no matter how hard Tyronn Lue worked them in practice. And by the way, Jim, I read some stories about how hard, Rick will verify some of this, how hard he ran them in practice. I mean, he's been beating these guys up so that they don't get soft and lazy and just do shoot-arounds for 9 days between, you know, competitions. Because the other team is playing hard 48 minutes every other night. He's working the daylights out of them so that there isn't any, you know, lull, any cool-down, any rust or any of that stuff to be, you know, to be a factor. But that rust thing is still, that 9 days without competitive basketball against an opponent rather than against yourselves is a concern for me going into game one tonight. So, well, that's a lot of stuff just to kind of get through the guest list, which I haven't even done yet. So John Godis from the Raptors HQ is going to join us at 3:35. At 4:05, the preview from the other side of that series from Rick Nolan, who covers the Cavaliers. Then at 4:35, we shift to baseball mode, and we're going to check in with Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, who's been covering the Tigers, and we're going to ask him about Brad Ausmus's tirade last night. How about that? And you know what? A lot of people, Jim, have been saying this has been far too long in coming. They need Brad Ausmus to show fire. They need him to show anger. They need him to show competitiveness. They need him to show spirit. They need him to do something to fire these guys up. And after they blew an 8-run lead and then still hung on, thankfully, for the Tigers to come back and win, fans now are saying, you know what, it's been far too long. This is the Ausmus fire that these guys, meaning the players, really need to see.
Now the windup in the 0-2. Strike three. Got him on the inside corner.
My goodness gracious.
And oh, he's just ejected Brad Ausmus. Brad's very animated. And if...
Uh-oh.
Brad Ausmus, wow. Took off his sweatshirt, laid it across home plate, drew a line in the dirt, threw his helmet. He's as animated as we've ever seen.
I've never seen this before.
There is a lot more to see, to be honest with you, and there is a lot more to hear. If you check our Twitter feed, it's not something I can or would play on live radio for obvious reasons, but if you check our Twitter feed, you know, the internet is another story. And our Twitter feed, there is video and audio, a hot mic close enough to home plate. When Brad Ausmus was going crazy last night over balls and strikes, there is a microphone and camera that was close enough to home plate to pick up everything he was saying. And to say that it is not safe for work and not safe for television and not safe for me to replay for you from radio is an understatement. You're going to hear some bombs. It's only 20 seconds is all they got before they realized, MLB realized that that mic was hot. And what was going out? And you know where I retweeted that from, Jim? Is from our guest at 4:35, Aaron McMahon. Aaron found
nice.
It. Yeah, Aaron found it on Twitter at Today's Play. That's the name of the handle of the place that that posted it. Hot mic Brad Ausmus goes out with a bang, and so Aaron had that this morning.
Nice.
I checked it out. I retweeted it. So follow all of that stuff on our Twitter feed.
And you're so right about the part we can't even play. Even if I did some of my editing magic, then you're just going to get one log beep. What's the point?
Well, actually, it's not that bad, Jim, to be honest with you, because some of it, it's 20 seconds, and the part where the mic is suddenly turned up by whoever the producers are there saying going to that is a ways into the 20. I don't know if the 8 seconds in or whatever. And then you only hear the bomb. It's the bomb. How was it said in A Christmas Story? The queen mother of all dirty words or something like that. The blank word. And when little Ralphie says, oh,
right. Of course, I didn't say fudge.
He said, only I didn't say fudge. I said that. Anyway, it's that one, and you got to see it. It's pretty funny. But it's the fire that a lot of people have been looking for from Ausmus. And it's good to know, Jim, that the word fire is being used in that context with respect to Brad Ausmus rather than the other one, that a lot of people were wondering if it's very far off, the word fire with respect to Brad Ausmus in a very, very different way. So for now, he's employed. They blew a lead again, but they came back and won anyway, and it's on to battle again tonight at 7:10. And Twins at Tigers once again. So we've got all of that on the table, and now we haven't even yet discussed a couple of things from last night. Oklahoma City, Golden State, at Golden State, where they didn't lose this regular season, right? Did they?
Twice. It was in the montage. Marv Albert pointed out that they lost two home games all year to Boston and Minnesota, and really funky
randomness.
And both
those were very late, too, because their streak was like San Antonio's.
Right.
Their home winning streak was like 41 games or something stupid going back, and then they finally lost at home to Golden State, I think.
Right.
I mean, it was to Golden State. And then Golden State, of course, was undefeated at home until the two that you just mentioned.
Yep.
So at any rate, what last night showed us in the Western Conference Final? Two things, actually. Number one, it shows that Oklahoma City's win over the San Antonio Spurs was not an accident. It wasn't a fluke. It wasn't a, you know, man, boy, they just got the right calls at the right time and San Antonio got screwed. Or it wasn't, boy, San Antonio got old really fast. Some of those things people say. The bottom line is Oklahoma City beat San Antonio three straight times. After losing game one, by the way, by 43. They beat them three straight times, and they beat them in dominant fashion in the final, in the sixth game, the third straight victory. They beat a team that won 67 regular season games, one of the greatest individual regular seasons of all time. The numbers go, by the way, if you're scoring at home, 73 now by the Warriors this year, 72 by the Bulls, 95-96, and then 69 by the Lakers and two others, I think, and then the 67 by the Spurs. It's one of the greatest of all time. And what Oklahoma City did to them, I think we can now say with clarity, was not an accident. They showed that they are indeed ready for prime time, meaning they're not just one of the other teams in the West that's not the Warriors or the Spurs. They have shown that they are ready to play in the NBA Finals. Now, despite that performance against the Spurs, they went into last night being decided underdogs against the mighty, mighty Steph Curry MVP-led 73-win Golden State Warriors who don't lose in their own building. Which brings us to number two, and that is that we have come to find out that the NBA's regular season is an entirely different world from the NBA playoffs. The series against the Spurs was a great example of that. But what happened last night at home by the ridiculously good Golden State Warriors at home showed that the 73 wins means nothing, nothing in these playoffs. And they certainly don't mean anything to Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. They did not go into Golden State last night in Oakland, California at the Oracle Arena in awe of this team thinking it's going to have to take our very best effort to just hang with these guys. They went into that game last night thinking, let's go out and beat these guys because they ain't all that. Russell Westbrook almost said as much prior to yesterday's game. Russell Westbrook, and we didn't play it for you, but Russell Westbrook was asked about Steph Curry and about his tremendous talent, his league-leading scorer, back-to-back MVP and everything else. And Russell Westbrook, without trying to be disrespectful and cause a problem, said, you know what? He's a shooter. He ain't nothing I've never seen before. That's it. His direct quote yesterday to the media about Steph Curry was, he's a shooter, he's not nothing I haven't seen, end quote. He compared it to defending Damian Lillard, too, who's really, really good, who's got a great shot, who's got great handles and get to the rack, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, this isn't new to me. And what I saw last night in that Oklahoma City win, aside from the fact that Oklahoma City won at Golden State with their two superstars, two of the five best players in the NBA, according to almost everyone who watches and studies this stuff, their two superstars, Durant and Westbrook, combined to miss two-thirds of their shots. They were a combined 20, or now I lost it. Is it, I'm looking for the box score now. I had the numbers before, but they literally shot 30%. They missed 70% of their shots is essentially what I'm trying to say, and I'm butchering it very badly as I try to say it, and I'm looking for each of theirs. I think Durant was 10 for 30. Durant was 10 for 30 in that game yesterday.
And Westbrook was 7 of 21.
7 of 21. There you go. So Westbrook, 33%. Durant, 30%. So combined, we're just going to say they missed more than two-thirds of their shots. That's all I'm trying to say. They're two best players, who are two of the best players in the NBA, two of the five best, shot the ball horribly. Horribly. And despite that, they won at Golden State. It didn't take MVP performances from Durant and Westbrook to beat Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. They had underwhelming performances because their shooting was off for most of the night. And despite those underwhelming performances, for goodness sakes, they took down Steph Curry and Klay Thompson anyway and have made this essentially now their series to lose. Because they are going home, no matter what happens tomorrow night, they're going home with home court advantage.
Yep.
So what do we have here?
And here, in addition to what we have here, the reason that, you know, this is a series, and you're talking about, well, this shows it's not a fluke against San Antonio. The biggest key to me, because for obvious reasons, I know you haven't gotten to it yet, but everyone's talking about, oh, did those guys travel at the end? Irrelevant. To me, that's irrelevant. That did not cost the game. You know what cost the game? The fact that the Golden State Warriors, in their own building, scored 14 points in the fourth quarter.
Well,
they played outstanding defense. The Thunder did. Also, that's the thing that's changed that I noticed in the San Antonio series, and that's why this isn't really as much of a fluke that some are trying to portray it as because of the missed travel calls,
well,
and they were missed.
There's a couple of responses to that, and then I'll get back to my main point. One is, yes, that defense by the Thunder forcing some very bad shots by the Warriors. The Warriors oftentimes choose to take very bad shots. And they're very bad shots that suddenly don't look so bad because somehow they make them.
Steve Curry said as much in the postgame that I played.
That's right. But they are bad shots for almost anybody else. And last night they were for them. So that's part A. So it's part defense and part Warriors decision-making on offense. Part number two about this, though, is the way Oklahoma City took care of the basketball in the second half. They had 10, count them, 10 first-half turnovers. And how did they end the half? Down 13. They turned the ball over in the second half, 24 minutes of basketball, one time. They finished with 11 turnovers for the game, 14 for the Warriors, just 11 for the Thunder. And what happened, obviously, they dominated in the second half. Russell Westbrook went off for a quarter. For the game, again, we just ran the numbers by. He was 7 out of 21. But for a quarter, a little over a quarter, he helped carry that offense, especially when Durant went cold. But most importantly, and this is where I'm going to go, I talked about, is it time for another bold prediction? There's a reason why I'm going to make one. Russell Westbrook made clear with the statement that he made yesterday to the media that I just read to you about, Curry ain't nothing special. He's nothing I haven't seen before. He's a shooter. Great shooter, but that's nothing special. He showed that he is absolutely, positively not in awe of Steph Curry. He doesn't fear him. I won't go so far as to say he doesn't respect him. You got to respect him. League's leading scorer, two-time MVP, the whole nine yards. Best three-point shooter in history. He respects him, but he doesn't respect him to the point where he's worried about him. He's not worried about him. And what he is doing is something that Curry hasn't really had a whole lot of guys do to him. he's putting so much pressure on Curry offensively when Curry is on defense. Westbrook's offense is putting so much pressure on Curry defensively that it eventually does take a toll on the body. It eventually does take a little toll on the gas tank. And eventually it affects the strength in the legs and in the knees when it comes to shooting those important long three-pointers in the fourth quarter that Curry has come to rely on. Russell Westbrook can, we use the athleticism, speed, hops, everything he has, aggressiveness, to really wear Steph Curry out if Curry isn't careful. It's the thing that we said last year in the finals that Curry was living a charmed life about. Kyrie Irving, now Irving is a tremendous offensive player. Obviously, he's leading the Cavaliers in scoring in the playoffs. But he's not anywhere near as fast as Russell Westbrook. When you have a point guard putting that kind of offensive pressure on Steph Curry on the defensive end, it affects him on the offensive end. And don't think for one second it didn't affect him as he went 9 of 22 from the floor. Don't think it didn't affect him when he turned the ball over 7 times himself. Let me say that again. The Warriors had 14 turnovers as a team. Half of them were from the MVP. Which brings me, as it's 3:33, and I got to get a break here so we can get our guests from Toronto on, to this bold prediction. I'm going to make it now, and I'm going to acknowledge it's easy to do. It might be the knee-jerk reaction thing from the Warriors win or loss last night to say, oh, I think the Thunder are going to win the series. But I'm not saying that with a knee-jerk reaction right now. Okay, I made the prediction when the series was 1-1 between the Thunder and the Spurs that I think the Thunder are going to win this series. I made it on the radio. I broke down why, and I talked to a number of guests who said, no, I still have San Antonio, even though it's 1-1. And I explained why, and it turned out that way. This one is 1-0, so I'm making it a little bit earlier. And I acknowledge, by the way, that the Warriors will probably win on their home floor in Game 2 tomorrow night. Again, it's just part of that pattern. But I believe that the Thunder have shown them something that the Warriors have not seen all year long. And that is a team that is absolutely positively not in awe of them, not overly concerned or fearful of them, and is ready to run with them and put pressure on them they've never seen before. I think the Thunder are peaking, and I think the Thunder are going to win this series. It is. I'm probably wrong. As most people will probably tell you, and Vegas is certainly going to tell you, I'm probably wrong. But I'm just making this call right now after game one. And it's not just because of the win and it's 1-0 now. It's because of the way the Thunder approached that game last night. The way Westbrook approached it and the fact that they beat Golden State with their stars shooting about 30%, missing about 65% or so of their shots, their two stars, that to me is just amazing. All right, I know I got to get out. Let's take that time out now. Get about our Sports Center. We're going to shift to the Eastern Conference Finals. Game one tonight in Cleveland. It'll be the Raptors and the Cavaliers. Can the Cavaliers keep the winning streak alive? They, of course, swept both of their series in the first two rounds in the Eastern Conference, but now a 9-day layoff. What does that mean from the rust as a rust factor, if there is indeed one? We're going to talk to Toronto Raptors writer John Godis from SB Nation's Raptors HQ next, right here on ESPN106.com.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, indeed. That is great advice that you just heard from Mr. Big Voice guy there. Take the ticket with you anywhere you go. Whether you're around the radio or not, you can always listen to the show and every one of the programs here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket just by downloading the app from our website, 106.5theticket.com. Great advice indeed. All right, staying on the NBA playoffs as game one of the Eastern Conference Finals is finally going to be played tonight in Cleveland. It got so bad waiting for the Raptors or the Heat to win that pathetically slow, boring, my god-awful, ugly basketball series that I kind of forgot the Cavaliers were even still in it. Thought they were eliminated or something. Every night, I'm watching the Thunder and the Spurs. I'm watching the Warriors and the Blazers. I'm watching the Heat and the Raptors. And you just kind of forgot, oh, yeah, the team that is undefeated in the playoffs because of two straight sweeps, they're not out. They're just resting for nine straight days. Finally, we get it going tonight. Game one, Raptors in Cleveland. And joining us now to talk about it from Raptors HQ, that is the SB Nation website for the Toronto Raptors, editor and writer for that website, John Godis. John, thanks for joining us from Toronto. Well, probably, are you in Cleveland right now?
I am actually in Winnipeg.
You're in Winnipeg. Okay. I didn't know if you were traveling to the game tonight.
Yeah. I will be tuning in from afar.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you for joining us from wherever north of the border it might be, Toronto or Winnipeg. So we're glad to have you. Hey, John, seriously, man, it's been a long wait for Cavaliers fans in Cleveland and here in Toledo and all over Ohio who support the Cavs to get this thing going. That series with the Heat dragged out so long. There was a lot of attrition. A lot of bodies fell, certainly on the Heat side. Valanciunas on the Raptors side. That was a long series. Now, you guys were, at least for us as we waited, you guys were in the whole thing. Did it seem to be as ugly and dragged out as it was for us, to you guys, as you played it?
Absolutely. I think aesthetically it was just not a pleasing series, even from our perspective, to watch, especially when those two big guys went down, Valanciunas and Whiteside. It mucked up the whole thing. Miami turned to a small ball lineup that they had some players out there who weren't entirely ready to play at that with that minutes total. And then for the Raptors, it seems like for the 14 games they've been in the playoffs here, they've been kind of playing to their competition. So it was, you know, just as mucky as I'm sure you guys saw it as.
Yeah, really. I mean, it was not only, you know, long, like I said, because it went seven while the Cavaliers ended in four. It just wasn't aesthetically pleasing. You're 100% right about that. And it seemed like for a portion of that series, too, that this tremendously explosive backcourt of the Raptors, you know, Lowry and DeRozan just forgot how to shoot the basketball. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not the, that, those aren't the guys that I saw in the regular season as they were the second seed in the East, and they beat the Cavaliers two out of three times. What happened? And obviously they were able to right the ship in time. So I guess my question to you is, where are the Raptors' guards? Where are their scorers as they begin this series? Are they the hot guys that finally came around, or the guys who really couldn't throw it in the ocean, it seemed like, for part of that series?
Well, I think you have to start, as you know, any conversation should, with the Raptors, with Kyle Lowry. The big moment for him was after Game 1, where he had just a putrid shooting performance. He spent time in the gym after. He's had an elbow issue with bursitis, and has just struggled kind of rediscovering his shooting stroke since he aggravated it in late March. So credit to him, though, he really turned around his play in the last three games of that series. From Game 5 on, he was tremendous. In Game 7, he probably had his best performance in the playoffs with 36 points. Then on the other side with DeMar DeRozan, it's kind of a frustration. He hasn't been efficient shooting the ball at all in these playoffs. I think it's around 35%. He tends to hijack possessions a little bit for the Raptors when he starts dribbling into nowhere, which can be frustrating to watch. So it's good that Kyle Lowry has come around. The Raptors are going to need Kyle Lowry at his absolute best against this Cavaliers team, but they're going to need DeRozan to come around too. And even though the points volume has been there for DeRozan, he hasn't done it efficiently, and it's been frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And not only are they going to need to figure that out as far as scoring points just to keep up with the Cavaliers, they're going to have to figure out how to guard somebody and guard somebody around the arc. Your thoughts as you watched the Eastern Conference semi between the Cavs and the Hawks, that display of three-point shooting is simply unprecedented. 77 threes, the most ever in a four-game series, almost the most ever of a series of any length, shooting over 50% in that series from three as a team. It wasn't just J.R. Smith, the sniper out there, and it wasn't just Kevin Love. It was everybody. Channing Frye, LeBron, Kyrie obviously is a great shooter, Dellavedova. They're doing things that, I'll be quite honest with you, that I didn't know they were capable of watching them as a team. So what do you think, what does Dwayne Casey do here to try to slow this team down from the arc? Or does he just say, hey, you know, it's the lowest percentage shot there is, let them fire out there until we have to change, you know, make a change?
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit optimistic about this facet. Against Miami, who was a hot shooting team heading into the series of the Raptors, they ran them off the line pretty well. and force them into just challenge three-point shots. Now, the Cavaliers are not a poor shooting three-point team, and they've kind of gone from good to great in the postseason. From the Raptors' perspective, I think they just need to run at these guys. They need to at least put a hand in their face. And the even bigger thing that I think they can impact, you know, from a Raptors' perspective, is they need to rebound the basketball after these shots. The Cavaliers have gotten second, third chances in that Hawks series where when they've missed the three-point shot, they get another chance. The Raptors just can't let that happen. They've got to limit the Cavaliers to one shot if they have any chance in this series. And then they just kind of have to hope and pray a little bit that the Cavaliers cool off, which could be likely, could be not likely. From what we've seen from the Cavaliers, they might just keep shooting the ball like this all the way through to the finals.
We're talking with John Godis from Raptors HQ, a part of SB Nation Online, the official SB Nation site for the Toronto Raptors. John is an editor and a writer. I'm going to play a quick clip for you here from LeBron James talking about this series as he gets ready for the Raptors.
They were chasing us all year, you know, for the number one seed. And, you know, we look forward to the matchup like, just as well as we look forward to Detroit and also Atlanta. Getting our work in and whoever was going to advance, we'll be ready to play against. We look forward to Tuesday night.
I think he's saying what he has to say, but I'm listening to the voice, and I'm listening to what he doesn't say. I guess I'm reading between the lines, as you were, and it doesn't sound like he's real thrilled to be here. You know, just like Detroit and Atlanta, it was pretty clear, and he even said so last week. He would love to play Miami. He wants an opportunity to play against his best buddy in the playoffs, Dwayne Wade, and he really isn't looking forward to this because because it's not Miami, I suppose. It's not his former team and his best buddy there. Do you think that level of perhaps, and again, I may be reading into it for the sake of conversation, but that level of disinterest in this series compared to what he wanted in the Miami series could be something that works to the Raptors' favor?
You know, it could be. I think LeBron is just one of those players where he wants a challenge and he wants something to go up against. You know, he saw Dwayne Wade on the other side, Chris Bosh. Obviously, Bosh wasn't playing, but he would have been on the sidelines, and he kind of would have seen that as something to get him up for the games. The Raptors, I think they'll have an easier time with as opposed to a fully healthy Miami Heat team. But that's not to say that he's not going to do what he did in the last two series, which is kind of just move the ball, let everyone else beat them. You know, he's always involved with the basketball. And if they keep that ball movement going, he can impact the game at the end. They've just kind of, with these Cavaliers games, the ones that I've seen at least, they've let teams hang around for quite a few of them and then just turn it on at the end and end up winning by quite a bit. So I wouldn't expect that to change that much. The Raptors just need to kind of withstand, like I said, the rebounds. They need to try to defend the three-point line. And if they stay competitive, you know, anything could happen. That's why they play the games.
No question about it. And that was going to be my next question is, what's the mood among Raptors fans like up there in Toronto? Is it, hey, you know, anything can happen. That's why we play the games. Or are they like, bring it on? You know, what LeBron said there is true. They were chasing us, meaning the Cavs, the Raptors chasing the Cavs, all season long for that number one seed. Couldn't quite catch them, but they beat them twice. Is the mood there like, you know what, we want this. Bring it on. You guys don't know what you're in for. Or are they just kind of like, well, maybe anything can happen. What's the feeling?
Yeah, it's funny. It kind of shifted a little bit in the last 2 days from what I've seen. After Sunday, you know, beating the Heat on national television, which is not something the Raptors see that often, they were kind of like, this is our moment. Like, Raptors fans, this is the moment that we've been waiting for. They're in the conference finals for the first time in franchise history, which is a tremendous accomplishment. But in the last 24 hours here, I think they've seen what the national media has presented them as, which is heavy, you know, heavy underdogs in this series. And fans, at least, have taken it as a chip on their shoulder. I think the players will take it that way as well. They'll get up for this series because essentially this team is playing with house money at this point. They were expected to get into a competitive second-round series. They came out of that series the victor. Everybody coming into this season thought the Cavaliers would be the Eastern Conference champions. The Raptors weren't even in that conversation. So it's house money at this point from my perspective, but I think fans and the team might have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder just based on how, you know, heavy the favorite is for the Cavaliers.
We're talking to John Godis, who writes for Raptors HQ, a part of SB Nation Online, covering those Toronto Raptors. Hey, last thing on this, with respect to the series, you know, LeBron James, is not leading his team in scoring in the playoffs for the first time in his career, and that includes his 4 years and four trips to the finals with the Heat. Even with another superstar like Dwayne Wade, he always led his team in scoring. Right now, Kyrie Irving is leading his team in scoring, and LeBron is second. One of the reasons for that, as I watch it and analyze it, is the Pistons and the Hawks tended to do the same thing to him, and that is say, you know what? You want to shoot that jumper from out there that you are very, very low percentage at, go ahead. I'm laying off for you. And LeBron recognizing that weakness in his game, that he has not been a consistent outside shooter all season long, really, if ever in his career. It's the weakest part of his game. LeBron is deferring and giving the ball to Kyrie to take those shots, giving the ball to J.R. Smith and the other, you know, snipers that they have had out there. Do you see the Raptors defending him the same way and saying, we'll let you beat us out here if you want, but we're just not going to let you become that 250-pound locomotive going to the basket that we know we can't stop?
It's really interesting because the guy who's going to spend the most time guarding him is Damari Carroll, and I think outside of Kawhi Leonard of the Spurs, Carroll is probably the best defender for a player like LeBron James because he takes away airspace, he frustrates the players he's defending, and this is really why the Raptors brought him to this team, is to guard guys like LeBron James on the perimeter. So I, you know, have the same questions as you, I think, when we see what Carroll's strategy is in defending James. Because typically what Carroll will do is get up in the guy's face, and what LeBron will respond to that is, like you say, the locomotive going right to the basket. So Carroll will have to change his strategy, kind of his innate strategy of defending, if they're going to give LeBron his jump shots. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out. My gut says that he's going to get in LeBron's face and try to force turnovers, which is what Carroll will try to do. I don't know if that's going to be that effective, and he might have to change strategies at some point in this series, but how they defend LeBron James, I think, is one of the biggest stories of this series, and whether they can be effective in doing that.
I want to shift gears on you in a moment, but before I do, just finish this one out then. What's your series prediction? Cavaliers, I'm certain even though you're in Toronto and you're rooting for the Raps, Cavs are going to win this. I think everybody says that and knows that. How far does it go in your mind?
Yeah, Cavs are heavy favorites, and I think tonight is the game the Raptors have to get if they're going to have any hope. I don't know if people are believers in Rust, but the Raptors are going to have to be believers in Rust if they're going to win this series. My prediction is Cavs in five. I think the Raptors will win one of them at home. But my hopes are for something better for Toronto. But, you know, my gut is saying Cavaliers in five.
Fair enough. That's a good call. And I feel the same way. But then again, I felt the same. First of all, I am a believer in Rust. I thought that when they had the 7 or 8 days off in between the Pistons and Hawks series, it might bite them in game one against the Hawks. Although I still predicted that they would win against the Hawks. I thought they might lose one at Atlanta, probably game three, which is kind of so often the pattern. And I'm going to repeat that prediction here. I think they could end up sweeping just like they did the first two series, but I'm going to go ahead and give the Raps probably game three if they are to take one away, although that Rust factor tonight could still be in play. Hey, last thing, and I don't know how much you do with the Blue Jays, if at anything at all. Obviously you write for Raptors HQ, but you know what, it's coincidental, I guess, that we have somebody on from Toronto right now, and I got to ask you, what is your mood, your thought on the whole thing there with Jose Bautista, the punch, the shot heard round the world, if you will? By the way, Rougned Odor was suspended 8 games today by Major League Baseball. It came down in the last half hour, an 8-game suspension for that punch. What's the feeling up there and your own personal one about the way that went down?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big Blue Jays guy, but I've got the feeling, you know, the Raptors sealed their series against the Heat, and then this happened, I think, 4 or 5 minutes either after or at the same time as the Raptors finished off that series. And it was just funny to me that Rougned Odor kind of stole our shine a little bit from Raptors Nation. Probably a deserved suspension from my perspective. I thought he got him pretty good, though. And the tension between those two teams, I think, is one of the things to watch for this baseball season, because just the hatred between the two squads is something I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things, though, that Bautista and Gibbons both made a point of saying, though, they don't have any more this season. They waited, did the Rangers, until the second to last at-bat and Bautista's last at-bat in the last meeting of the season between these two. So if they play to do that, so if they play each other again, it'll be in the playoffs, which would be something. And if they don't make the playoffs against each other, then this thing carries over to next April when they start this whole thing over again. So it's just a kind of amazing thing coming out of Toronto right now. A lot of sports news coming out of Toronto, including, of course, the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time ever for the Raps tonight in Cleveland. John Godis, editor at SB Nation's Raptors headquarters, Raptors HQ online. Let's keep in touch with one another. We'd love to have you on. Maybe when the series shifts back to Toronto, we'll chat again and get a little preview and see where we are at that time. Sound good?
Sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. All right, there's John Godis, the Raptors' point of view up there in Toronto. DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, they're going to have to be explosive, and they're going to have to be efficient to be able to hang with the Cavaliers. They're also going to have to defend Kyrie Irving and J.R. Smith and Kevin Love and everybody else who hangs outside the arc right now for this incredibly hot shooting Cleveland Cavaliers team, setting a record in that four-game sweep of the Hawks with 77 threes as a team. And even most impressively, a percentage over 50 as a team from beyond the arc. That's just something you don't see. You don't see two-point percentages as a team very often over 50% for an extended period, let alone a playoff series, let alone to have the low-percentage three-point shots falling at that kind of a clip. All right, so that's the Raptors side of things. We're going to get the Cavaliers side of things after the top of the hour Sports Center. We're going to hear from Rick Noland, who's covering the team out there in Cleveland. We'll get his preview of the series and his prediction for the series. Baseball on the way as well this next hour of the extravaganza. Brad Ausmus's show that he put on yesterday in a come-from-behind victory. How about that? We'll call it a come-from-ahead victory because they had a big lead, an 8-run lead. They blew it. They ended up coming back to win anyway. But Ausmus, of course, putting on a show for the fans, getting ejected, deciding to redecorate home plate. Maybe it was cold as he draped his sweater over it. We're going to talk about Ausmus and the Tigers' struggles, and where they go from here. After that very strange one yesterday, Aaron McMahon will join us to do that conversation at about 4:30 or 4:35. All right, SportsCenter now, your phone calls hopefully next hour in addition to all of the above right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
As Curry got the step on Durant, it's good! It's Curry over Robinson. Yes! At the buzzer! A 14-5 Golden State run. The last 3 minutes, Curry hits a second three of the half.
And you cannot give him any daylight.
What? Here comes Thompson.
Oh, my goodness.
Thompson, and it looked like Ibaka got a piece of it.
This is outstanding defensive play at both ends.
45-2. The only losses during the regular season to Boston and Minnesota. Here's Durant. He finally hits. Kevin Durant had missed on his last seven shots before that jumper.
Well, you knew it was going to be law of averages.
22 seconds remaining. They put pressure on. Westbrook out of the backcourt. And a travel is called. Or did he call a timeout? The Warrior bench was furious. They thought Westbrook was over and back.
It wasn't so much what happened in the last minute. It was what happened really throughout most of the second half. A lot of quick shots, way too many quick shots. 5 minutes left in the game, and we're down four or whatever, and we were acting like we had 20 seconds left. 5 minutes is an eternity. We know how we have to play. We have to pass and move and create rhythm.
We got rushed a little bit, trying to go for the home run plays. You know, sometimes it works, and we need to have more composure to be able to slow it down and work, you know, those possessions. Got out of character a little bit. Something we'll learn from going forward.
Well, we scored 38 points in that third. You know, Russell was catalyst, get to the rim, finishing. We just followed that lead, and we just play hard on the defensive end. You hear it all the time, defense wins.
They change the lineups a lot throughout the game. You know, sometimes they have Green at the center, but I thought our bigs did a great job of knowing personnel, switching out, doing a great job of making a finish over our line.
This is the Bob Franz Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
NBA playoff talk continues into hour number two on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, again, if you are interested in chatting Tigers with us after Brad Ausmus's show last night, we can do that. We're going to talk about the Tigers, about Ausmus, about the fire he showed, and about the struggles of the Tigers. Even though they won yesterday, things still not exactly looking up for them right now. We're going to talk to Aaron McMahon of MLive.com about that at about 4:35. But for now, staying with the NBA, and that was, of course, Western Conference Final Game number one last night, a tremendous win for Oklahoma City, despite off-shooting nights for both of their superstars. And we're going to get into the first game of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight as well. It's going to be in Cleveland, and it's going to be the Cavaliers and the Raptors. At long last, we know who the opponent is, and it's finally going to get underway tonight at about 8:30. And joining us now to break that down from the Cleveland side of things, after talking to John Godis from Raptors HQ, from the Raptors' perspective, we now welcome back Rick Nolden to the program right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Rick, how are you, bud?
Real well. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate you spending the time with us. Looking forward to this thing tonight. Did it seem as long to you as it did to me, and it had to have seemed for the Cavs, 9 days in between games, the end of the Hawks series, and finally tonight?
Yeah, it seemed even longer, quite honestly.
That's because you had to write about it. That's because you had to think of stuff
yeah.
to write for 9 days.
By Friday of last week, Bob, it had seemed like it had been 2 weeks since I played a game already. It really only had been 5 days. It's nine now, but it seems like it's been an eternity, quite honestly. I think maybe part of that was the Miami-Toronto series may have been one of the hardest to watch seven-game series I've ever seen. The games were, you know, incredibly close right up until the last one, but the caliber of play was just not good.
You know, even the Raptors writer that I talked to last segment, Rick, said the same thing. You know, I mean, and they're happy. They made the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in franchise history. But even he said it was not exactly aesthetically pleasing to watch those seven games, even though they were in them. So you can only imagine what it was like for the rest of us watching and waiting for that thing to end, especially given how red hot the Cavaliers were, seemingly, as you say, an eternity ago, and wanting to get this thing rolling.
Yeah, you know, back when Golden State was still playing Portland, they were playing on a lot of the same nights as Toronto and Miami were playing. And it was almost like you had to watch the JV game before you got to watch the varsity game.
That's true. That's a pretty good analogy. That's how it looked. I mean, those, you know, and no disrespect, and I know you don't mean any either, and nobody that's criticizing the Raptors or the Heat or trying to be disrespectful, but it was an ugly style, and also the attrition. As bodies started dropping and Valanciunas goes out and Whiteside goes out and there's injuries all over the place in that, it just, you know, the longer the thing went, the uglier it got in terms of, you know, entertaining basketball for the fan.
Yeah, you know, and then it looked like, you know, Damari Carroll and Luol Deng might be going out there for a minute. They
right.
both came back and played, but, you know, that'd have been two starters out for Toronto or Miami against Cleveland that I think has a decided edge, even if Toronto's 100% healthy. So, you know, at least to have Damari Carroll, at some point they may get Valanciunas back. How effective he's going to be remains to be seen. Just don't jump back into basketball after a high ankle sprain. So we'll see how all that plays out. But I think either way, you know, this is a series I think the Cavs will win and expect to win.
You know, Rick Nolden is our guest breaking down the Eastern Conference final game one tonight from the Cavaliers' perspective after we talked Raptors a few minutes ago. One of the things my guest talked about with Damari Carroll was that, and I think it's fair to say, I can't really think of too many people that defend LeBron James well. There's a reason he is what he is. Nobody defends him well. But he said that outside of Kawhi Leonard, Damari Carroll might be the best matchup in terms of defending LeBron, somebody who isn't afraid to get in his face and guard him and play him off the dribble and challenge his shots, that if anybody can do it, you know, and nobody really can, but it's a guy like Damari Carroll after Kawhi Leonard. Do you agree with that?
I don't know, Bob. I know Damari Carroll wasn't 100% last year in the conference finals when he was with the Hawks, but LeBron put up 30 points, 11 rebounds, and 9-plus assists against him last year. So, you know, if LeBron wants to score, he's going to score. But I think right now the Cavs are in such a good place that he's happy being the creator and the facilitator and setting Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and the rest of his teammates up. You know, Carroll's got some length. He's got okay strength for a guy with his wiry build.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be easy for LeBron to score, but I think if he puts his mind to it, he will.
Well, what you said is so true, that LeBron is at least in the first couple of series, is perfectly happy setting other guys up, and he's got so many assists on threes. It's unbelievable by far and away, and I don't have it in front of me. I did last week. The number of assisted three-pointers, it's like more than double the second-place guy in the playoffs. So he knows where to find his guys. They know when and where to spot up to be in his line of vision, and he finds them. But the question is can they keep that shooting up? I just posted before you came on, Rick. I tweeted it out from our Sports Radio 106.5 Twitter feed. Just a reminder of what that game two was like, the 25
right.
three-pointers. I tweeted a video of all 25. It takes 4 minutes and 18 seconds to play all, to play all of the threes they made in that game. You know, and then you go to the whole thing, the 77 in the four-game series, and you think to yourself, look, that's the anomaly. That's the outlier. That can't continue. And again, we didn't say it would continue in games two or three and four after game two, but it kind of did. Can it continue into another series, or is the rust a factor, or how do you see that aspect of their offense, which of course carried them in this series?
Yeah, you know what? It's hard to say that they're going to continue to shoot 46% from behind the arc, which is what they are through eight games of the playoffs. But on the flip side of that, they're getting such naturally open, uncontested looks. And they have so many quality shooters that it wouldn't shock me if it did continue. You know, they're not going to make 25 probably again in the playoffs, but we're to the point where I fully expect them, you know, they're averaging 16.8 through eight games. So, you know, I almost expect them now to make 13, 14, 15 a night. And
that's my concern, Rick. That's my concern. I kind of do too, and I wonder if they do. And if those don't start dropping, or if they, let me rephrase that, if they start rimming out, because they have all been dropping, but if they start rimming out and it's just not there, how quickly will they be able to adjust since they've been kind of counting on it?
LeBron was adamant this morning at shoot-around that they are not a perimeter-oriented team, that they are a team that is efficient inside or outside, and they'll take what the defense gives them.
Mm-hmm.
I still, for the life of me, don't even know what the Hawks were trying to do in that series defensively, because Kevin Love got three wide-open shots on three straight possessions on basically the same play three straight times. So, you know, at some point you got to believe that this team is capable of knocking down shots. You know, Toronto's got a great rim protector in Biombo, but if Tristan Thompson's not in the game, he's going to have to defend somebody on the perimeter, and that either opens up drives to the hoop or more three-pointers if he's unable to do that. So I think it's a pretty good matchup for the Cavs when you look at the position-by-position breakdowns and styles of play. I think Toronto has to play near-perfect basketball to their talent level to even have a chance in most games.
Yeah, and I am looking at the position-by-position, by the way, yours as you broke them down against one another. And that is right next to the sidebar on five
reasons.
Five reasons, right. Five reasons you have why the Cavs will beat the Raptors. And then, of course, as the companion piece, you have to come up with five reasons why the Raptors will beat the Cavs. And I'm not going to go through them all. The only thing I want to point out two things. One is I'm disappointed that you didn't follow through with what you sent me privately about 4 days ago. And just to give the inside baseball, I thought it was hilarious because going into the Hawks series, we joked, and I said, you know, because you were trying to come up with five reasons the Hawks will win, and eventually I said, right. Why didn't you just write number five? I got nothing.
Right.
This, This time you suggested, I've got one for one of the five reasons the Raptors will beat the Cavs, team-wide flu outbreak.
Right.
And
right.
I was so, when I saw the paper this morning, I got to see this. And I was so confident you would actually write that as number five, and you stayed away from it, and you actually tried to be legit. What gives? Because there aren't five legit reasons why they can do this.
There really aren't five reasons, but I can tell you this, that, Bob, I swear on a stack of Bibles that the team-wide influenza outbreak was in there. And
did your editor spike it?
No. I had a sudden, like, legitimate thought that probably wasn't a real good one. But I later changed it. I had this eerie feeling we were up there Sunday while they practiced after the Toronto-Miami game had been decided. And you could hear the balls bouncing on the practice court from where we were sitting in the room adjacent to it. And I then changed the fifth reason to the ghost of Jim Jones originally, that somebody would go down with a broken foot in that practice while I was sitting.
That would have been good. Right? That would have been good. You dumped that one,
yeah,
too.
They were both better than what I came up with, probably. honestly, isolation offense probably should have been the fourth one. I thought of that last and just took out the lighthearted one and put that in. What I probably should have done, if I could do it over again in hindsight, would be to eliminate the fourth reason, which I think was something about the possibility of getting better.
If that, right.
That was a real stretch there. So I could have taken that out, moved isolation up to number four, and then put Jim Jones or influenza outbreak as the fifth one. So.
Let me throw something at you just in that spirit, Rick. We're talking to Rick Noland, the outstanding Cavaliers beat writer, who is in Cleveland for game one between the Raptors and the Cavaliers tonight. Just in the spirit of what you're doing, for example, numbers two and three are both, of course, non-definitive. That's not the word. Momentum and no pressure. These are not tangible. These are intangibles. That's
correct.
What I'm trying to say.
Correct. Correct.
You and I work in words for a living. You write them and I say them and I can't speak. Those are intangibles. Momentum, you know, that the Raptors have, of course, because they just played and they've been playing and they're coming off the high of a game seven victory and a first trip to the finals, Eastern Conference Finals in their franchise history. They got momentum. And then there's no pressure on them because nobody expects them. You could put that in all the series, by the way. Pistons,
absolutely.
No pressure. Hawks,
right.
No pressure. But since those are intangibles, I thought of one myself when I listened to this clip that I'm going to play for you right now from LeBron from this morning.
Okay.
And I know you've already heard it because you were there, but I'm going to play this again. I'm going to throw an intangible at you in the same spirit of stupidity just to see what you think about it. All right, Rick, here we go. This is
great.
Is just a 12-second clip of LeBron talking about the Raptors.
They were chasing us all year, you know, for the number one seed. And, you know, we look forward to the matchup just as well as we look forward to Detroit and also Atlanta. Getting our work in and whoever was going to advance, we'll be ready to play against. We look forward to Tuesday night.
Now, I'm listening as much to what he didn't say as I am to what he did say, and I'm listening to the tone of voice as to what he did say. And he sounds like a guy who is really, really underwhelmed by the challenge before him. Like, yeah, we're looking forward to this just like we did to the Detroit and the Atlanta series. It's clear that he wanted the Miami series. He wanted to play Wade. He said so to you guys, you reporters, last week, that he really wanted to play against his buddy and, of course, his former team. So how about, along with your intangibles of momentum and no pressure, I throw one out there called indifference. LeBron just not being real thrilled about this thing anyway. He didn't get what he wanted, and maybe that makes him a little underwhelming out there as far as being the force that he obviously is.
Well, yeah, I get the reasoning behind it, but on the opposite side of that, I will tell you that LeBron on Sunday, LeBron yesterday, and for the most part, LeBron this morning has been incredibly serious and straightforward, probably more so than I've seen him at any time since he's returned to Cleveland. You know, normally he'll joke around, he'll talk about stuff outside of basketball, but if he didn't like the question or he didn't like where it was going, he just brushed it aside and moved on to the next one. So I don't think there is any issue, honestly, with his focus and desire to get this thing over with as fast, painlessly, and quick as possible.
And that is what I would expect no less from a competitor like that who has been through these things as many times as he had, of course, has, of course, in his, 13th year now. So Rick, from the layoff standpoint, just real quick, to wrap this part of the conversation up, as I understand it, again, I'm not there, you're reporting and you see what practices are like. Tyronn Lue has been working the daylights out of these guys. They're not just showing up every day and having shoot-arounds and strategy talks. They're busting their butts so that their bodies are in the same kind of warm, if you will, or you know, that the rust and the fact that they haven't played for 9 days in competition isn't going to be as difficult for them to overcome against a team that's been playing every other night for the last 9 days.
Yeah, you know, they've had a couple lighter days, but they've picked it up. They had a really serious, I guess, versa climber workout the other day, almost a competition, a pretty serious weightlifting session.
Yeah, that's what I was reading about, right?
Yeah, and I know they practiced real hard yesterday, went over a lot of technical stuff on Sunday and Saturday. They even started going over a few of Miami and Toronto's sets on Saturday, I believe it was, because Lou said that there was like basically five plays that they run that are almost identical. But, you know, the rust thing, you know, I it's always a consideration or a small worry, but I'd still rather win in four games than in seven and take my chances with being rested. As opposed to Toronto, which I believe is playing its 15th game in 31 days tonight. So I'd rather be the Cavs than the Raptors right now.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair to say. I would.
Not for many reasons.
I would want to be in that same situation. In each of the previous series, I've had you on before game one, and you and I both have said five. Against the Pistons and against the Hawks, and we've kind of said, you know, they'll probably win both at home, and then if they lose one, it'll be the first game back on the other team's home floor, probably game three.
Right.
And of course, we were wrong, and they swept. What do you call them this time?
You know what? I stayed with the exact same theory and picked the Cavs in five, thinking Toronto would win their first game back at home in game three. One thing they do have. The tremendous, tremendous fan base, and a very, very loud crowd. They also have no pressure. They have had for them a fantastic postseason, regardless of whether they get swept in this series or not. So maybe they steal one, but you know, the other thing I was thinking, Bob, right before you called, it's entirely possible that if Cleveland sweeps this series, that they're going to go into the NBA Finals, where their toughest series you could end up making an argument for it would have been the Detroit Pistons, and I would have never thought that going in, but they at least had a chance to win Game One and Game Four. We'll see how Toronto unfolds. If they win one game, then I guess that automatically makes it a tougher series than the previous two, but. I wouldn't be surprised if they do the Moses Malone and go the fo-fo-fo, but I'm sticking with five. And like I told you twice before, if I pick five and they win in four, I consider that close enough. I got it right.
Yeah, I totally agree. Absolutely right. And I feel the same way. Although I will say that I also feel the same way you and I talked before the Hawks series about that rust thing. And, you know, you said you picked the same reasoning, the whole thing about game three would be the most dangerous one, but you said you had this gut feeling, and I agreed with you, going into the Hawks game one, that this long layoff might be kind of a factor, and there's a sneaking suspicion that the Hawks could steal game one. Obviously, that turned out not to happen, but I feel that same way tonight, that just weird little feeling that 9 days off is still 9 days off. No matter how hard they work, no matter how hard they practice, they weren't in game competition every other night for the last, you know, week plus, the way the Raptors have been, and that sometimes can really, really play a role. So I'm not picking them to lose tonight, but it's one of those things where it's in the back of my mind where I'm like, I hope they get past that. You know, it's just, it's one of those things you got to consider.
Yeah, you know, and if you think back to that game one against the Hawks, it came really, really close to happening. They came from 18 down to getting the lead with 9 minutes to go in that game and then kind of re-crumbled from that point on. So,
that's exactly right. And that's one of the reasons why I think about it now, too. They were able to stave that off last time. And, you know, theoretically, this should be a tougher challenge. This is the 2 seed, and they beat the Cavaliers 2 out of 3, although, you know, what we saw last night in the Western Conference Finals kind of proves that the regular season really doesn't mean squat when you get into these series.
No, because it's so much about situations and schedules and road trips when you play these teams in the regular season and highs and lows that you're going through, you know, on your own side that have nothing to do with the opponent. Toronto's a good team, but they're just a good team. They don't have a lot that really scares you outside of their 2 guards, and they don't shoot the ball particularly well either. So, you know, they're probably going into most of these games with a 12 to 18 point disadvantage just from behind the arc. So they're going to have to get, you know, 30 from DeRozan and probably 30 from Lowry.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the other thing that in the regular season games that they were successful, Lowry torched Kyrie a few times.
Correct.
And Kyrie looks like, to me, a different defender in these playoffs. He has committed to it, and I think he has been not just a capable, but you know, an above-average defender, at least through 2 series.
He does, and he's averaging 24.4. He's kind of getting them in a non-dominating fashion, which I think is really good for the Cavs.
Agreed.
He's not dribbling the ball 37 times in possession, and shooting fadeaways. He's getting a lot of squared up catch and shoots, which, you know, he never seemed comfortable with before. And suddenly he's become adept at making those. Lowry has just tons more pressure on him than Kyrie has, because if Lowry doesn't play great, I don't think Toronto has much of a chance in any game. Kyrie can have an off night, and the Cavs could still win by 12 to 15, 18 points if, you know, LeBron and Kevin Love and J.R. Smith carry the show. They have no such pickup possibilities in Toronto, I don't think.
That's a great point, and that's going to lead me into my last question, which is to switch conferences. If somebody would have told you or me that Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook would go combined 17 for 51, because that's what they were. Durant was 10 of 30, and Westbrook was 7 out of 21. Both of them, I mean, combined for 33%. And they're going to beat Golden State at Oracle. I decided to bet my mortgage on it. Are you kidding me? They won with their 2 stars having off shooting nights, and they took Golden State out and have taken obviously home court advantage away from them now going into game 2.
Yeah, that 17 of 51 number was the first thing I tweeted after the game. If you'd have gave me that beforehand, I'd have told you Golden State would have won 120 to 92 or something like that.
I would have made a bigger spread, but yeah.
The interesting thing, though, is as that game unfolded, I have a friend who is originally from Oklahoma City, and we were messaging back and forth, and I never ruled OKC out of the game, and it's like I told him, Golden State got that lead to 12, 13, or 14 points on 3 or 4 different occasions. And each time Oklahoma City came right back and got it to 6 or 5 or 7, wasn't able to sustain and fell right back behind by 12 or 13. What I told him is if they can get to that point at the right time, sustain it, and go by, I think they're going to win this game. And at the end of the 3rd quarter and the beginning of the 4th, they were able to do that. And I think for maybe the first time all year, we saw the Warriors panic just a tiny bit and try to hit home runs rather than just moving the ball around and continuing to play their game. So, you know, now they face the task of having to do that. I never say a game is a must win unless it's an elimination game, because what do you do at the game after that if you don't win that one? game two is extremely close to that. They would face tremendous odds against them if they went down 2-0 and then had to go to OKC for the next two. So, you know, if they win by 25 and they flow in, great. But if the game is tight again, how are they going to react in the last 2 or 3 minutes? You know, when suddenly three-point shots become just a little bit harder to make.
You know what's really amazing about all of that and the way that series is going? It just started, but I think it's going to go for a while, is in the regular season, Oklahoma City was a terrible fourth-quarter team. In tight games against the best competition, they would have leads that would melt away in the fourth quarter. And as we know, Steph Curry and the Warriors have lived with dramatic three-point shooting and incredible comebacks or extensions of leads to put teams away in the fourth quarter. So for the Thunder, to do what they did in the fourth, and they took care of the ball too, Rick. They had 10 turnovers in the first half. They had one the entire second half. Curry turned it over 7 times himself. So there's a weird dynamic going on there, and I'm going to sound stupid for picking against the, you know, defending champions, 73 wins based on one game, and I really don't think it is because of just one game, but look, Steph's got to play defense against Westbrook for 40 minutes,
right.
Westbrook's athleticism makes him work harder than he ever will anywhere else, and I think it affected his ball handling with the 7 turnovers. It affected his shooting. He was, 6-for-22 or something? I'm crazy, I think, probably, but I picked the Thunder against the Spurs, and I'm picking them again now to stop the Warriors. It's crazy, but I just think it's a weird matchup. They're playing at a peak performance after beating the Spurs 3 straight times the way they did so handily, especially in the last one, and now this. I don't know. I just think there's something in the stars that says the Thunder going to the finals.
Yeah, I still think the Warriors are going to win this, but it may take them 7 to do it. There was, you mentioned Oklahoma City's fourth quarter struggles in the regular season. That had a long stretch last night, Bob, where they weren't playing real well either. From like the 8-minute mark to almost the 3-minute mark of that fourth period, they were up 4, and they could have easily been up 12 or 13 or been behind 6. Neither team could make a bucket. There were a lot of really bad shots and bad possessions by both teams, and Durant couldn't buy a bucket. He got some decent looks, but they still showed that habit of that we've seen here in Cleveland in previous years of running too much clock, not running any offense at all, and then basically having one of their two superstars try to get something with 3 seconds on the shot clock. I don't think they're entirely over that, but no player in the league plays harder than Russell Westbrook. He may not always play the smartest, but he leaves everything he has at both ends of the court, every loose ball, every rebound. He's a ferocious defender. He gambles a bit, but he competes. And, you know, when he gets it going from the perimeter, there's not a whole lot you can do against him because of his athletic ability to get all the way to the rim as well. So
no question.
I think it's going to be a phenomenal series. I will be watching every game when I'm not watching the Cavs 4 or 5 games over Toronto.
Well, I think that series is going to be a little bit easier to watch than the Raptors and Heat were. So,
it will be more enjoyable, I think, from a pure basketball perspective.
Rick Noland, Cavaliers beat writer, covering the Cavs and the Raptors. Game 1 tonight out in Cleveland at about 8:30. Hope you don't catch the team-wide flu in the locker room after the game, and hope we can talk to you again soon as the series rolls on.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Rick. Good stuff, as always. Rick Noland joining us. We're going to get out now. Bottom of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. Then baseball time. We've got to talk about what's going on with the Detroit Tigers. If you're a Tigers fan, you were probably waiting for something like what you saw last night. Passion and fire from Brad Ausmus.
Now the windup in the 0-2. Strike 3. You got him on the inside corner.
My goodness gracious.
And he's just ejected Brad Ausmus. Brad's very animated, and if...
Uh-oh.
Brad Ausmus, wow, took off his sweatshirt, laid it across home plate, drew a line in the dirt, threw his helmet. He's as animated as we've ever seen.
I've never seen this before.
So there it is. Brad Ausmus gets tossed. Aaron McMahon of MLive.com covering those Tigers, going to talk to us not only about that, but on where the Tigers are right now as they continue to struggle and scuffle. They can't even put a team away with an 8-run lead like they had yesterday. We'll talk about that next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And as we roll on now at 4:43, want to shift gears, talk a little baseball. And since we're talking Tigers baseball, let's talk about the Hens real quick, huh? You want to go to the Hens and Durham Bulls game on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, a week from today, the 24th, at 6:30 at Fifth Third. I got a pair for you. All I got to do is be the 10th caller, as we like to do it, to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, Hens and Bulls. At Fifth Third on Tuesday, the 24th. All right, I want to get up to the big league club, though, of course, up in Detroit. The Tigers have had a rough go of it, as you know, and maybe, just maybe, a little bit of the frustration boiled over last night for Brad Ausmus.
Now the windup in the 0-2. Strike three, you got him on the inside corner.
My goodness gracious.
And he's just ejected Brad Ausmus. Brad's very animated, and if...
Uh-oh.
Brad Ausmus, wow, took off his sweatshirt, laid it across home plate, drew a line in the dirt, threw his helmet. He's as animated as we've ever seen.
I've never seen this before.
If you're curious as to how animated Brad Ausmus was after what he says about seven or eight of his hitters, all complaining about the strike zone. What put him over the edge, if you're wondering how animated that was, go take a look at our Twitter feed right now. Follow us on Twitter at SportsRadio1065, because I retweeted something that Aaron McMahon from MLive threw up there a little bit earlier today, and that is the actual audio, hot mic down by home plate, picking up what Brad Ausmus had to say before he laid that sweater down and went on his... ended up leaving the field. He got his words in, and many of them are not suitable for air, which is why I just have to tell you to find it on the Internet on Twitter. I can't play it for you right here. Aaron McMahon joins us now. He's covering the Tigers for MLive.com, and he joins us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing well, Bob. Good greetings from Detroit.
Well, thank you for joining us. First of all, before we get into the Ausmus tirade and the status of Brad Ausmus as the manager of the Tigers, which a lot of people still say is very much in doubt, the way this team has played and performed and some of the acquisitions in the offseason have underperformed. Before we get into all of that, let's just talk specifically about the ability to close out a game. 8-0 after one inning. With Jordan Zimmermann on the mound, how do the Twins come back and tie that up? I mean, thank goodness for Castellanos hitting the tiebreaker, because he might have been, Brad might have been shown the door after last night's game.
Yeah, it was a seesaw game. It was interesting, and it was a less than stellar start from Jordan Zimmermann. He started the season off with six, really good starts, and his record reflected that. ERA was the lowest in the American League. And to be honest, I think he got maybe a little too comfortable. He said after the game, with an 8-run lead there after the first inning, that he kind of went out there in the second and third inning with the idea that, he could be a little more lax, instead of focusing on the corners, maybe just focus in on the outer third of the plate and stuff like that. So I think it was maybe a case of Jordan getting a little lax. At the same time, and I think I tweeted out last night, and it was one of the first things I noticed, like, after the ballpark, but the wind was blowing up left field. And in some instances, it was heavy. It was 15, 20, 25 miles an hour. So anytime a fly ball went off that way, as you saw the home runs last night, were in left field. He left a couple pitches up and they hit, I think, three home runs off of him. So that played a factor as well. So the left and stellar, start from Jordan Zimmermann, and then the offense just kind of, fell asleep there for a good five innings.
Well, I think it says one thing about the start to the season that Jordan Zimmermann had, that he can go seven and give up seven earned runs, eight overall, and have his ERA still sit at a buck and a half. Lets you know how good he has been. And what makes this one odd, obviously, Aaron, is what Tigers fans are used to seeing when the Tigers blow leads. It's not the starter, it's the bullpen. And in this particular case, they just kept chipping away, obviously, and reaching the starter to the point where it was 8-8 before those heroics. Let's talk about Brad Ausmus now. The word crosshairs has been used many, many times when discussing Brad Ausmus over the last couple of weeks in Detroit and among Detroit fans here in Toledo as well. because he's in them, and he even acknowledged as much. This is a, what, 100 and what's the payroll? 160 or 170 million dollar payroll or something ridiculous?
Close to 200 million. Yeah.
It's over 200, Jim. That's right. It is. We talked about this the other day that the Dodgers are at like 250 or 270, and there's only two others higher. I think Yankees and Red Sox above the Tigers. That's right. So you got a $200 million payroll that Mr. Ilitch put out there. Went out there and spent the money on Zimmerman. Went out there and spent the money on Upton. Obviously has re-signed the stars that he needed to. He's got JD Martinez. And for this to be the result right now, it's certainly unacceptable for everybody. How bright is that spot? No, that's the wrong way to say it. How hot is that hot seat, do you think, that the manager is sitting in right now? And do you think last night's explosion over balls and strikes was tactical to fire up his team, or was over frustration for him knowing that he's on that hot seat?
You know, it's interesting because the start of yesterday, and I wrote about it on MLB.com this morning, but, you know, beginning before the game yesterday, the media met with Brad, and Brad doesn't get fired up often. You know, he's not a real emotional person, and he said so. But, you know, he kept fielding question after question about his job status, and he got upset about it. You know, he kind of went off on a reporter and basically told to stop asking about it. He realizes he's in the hot seat. He understands it. And I think he's hearing the noise. But then again, you know, after the game, he was asked about his tirade, and he said it was exclusive to, you know, the game itself. You know, like you said earlier, he was hearing about the strike zone from his hitters, and he just had, at that point, he had had enough. You know, between that and the combination of the fourth inning where Minnesota went off, they scored four runs, and I think with six hits, two infield hits, one hit the bag at second base, just a lot of fluke plays. So I think Brad said it was built up frustration from the game, but I would be hard pressed not to say that the emotion, the outside noise had something to do with it.
Talking to Aaron McMahon of MLive.com covering the Detroit Tigers. By the way, point of clarification, I didn't think that what I read was right about the buck and a half for Jordan Zimmerman even after last night. It just couldn't be. There was a typo in the box score that I read because I'm looking at another box score that has it accurate. His ERA now after last night is 2.45. So I wanted to be clear that was incorrect what I read earlier. So, but back to Ausmus now. He's human. He should get upset by having to talk about his job security all the time, because anytime somebody says, how worried are you about your job, they are saying to you, you suck and your team sucks, and how long until you're fired? Everybody and anybody is going to take that personally. So for him to answer it as many times as he has while keeping his cool is a credit to him. The explosion on the field, however, is something different, because as you pointed out, and he has acknowledged, he's just not an overly emotional guy. He remains calm. He tries to stay in control of situations. But that's something that a lot of fans have said, and even some media, is a problem. That sometimes the players need to see fire. They need to see something that is, maybe even if it is out of character for you, that shows that you're passionate and you are fired up and you're fed up or whatever it is, just to give them that little edge too, so that they kind of snap out of whatever malaise they may be in. So you know, whether it was overly emotional or tactical, it's something that a lot of people believe is really overdue.
No, you're right. You know, that's been brought up time and time again, and it's brought up with Brad, and Brad, every time he kind of comes back, he says, you know, that's not who I am. That's not what I, you know, I want to project, at least publicly. Now, he has hinted at those, you know, quote-unquote clubhouse blow-offs at the players. You know, he won't go into detail. He won't, you know, tell us when or how or why. But he has acknowledged that those have happened this year. You know, in terms of frequency and content and everything else, I can't tell you. But from everything we've seen from Brad, I guess, publicly, you know, that's just not, you know, it's just not him.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, you can only be what you are, and I get that, and I understand that, and I respect that. But when I don't say majority, but when a lot of people are saying your players might need more than that, then sometimes you got to break out of your own shell and do whatever it is, even if it's fake, even if it's acting, even if it's not comfortable for you. So let's talk not just about Brad Ausmus's performance thus far, and obviously the team is scuffling and struggling even after that win last night against one of the two worst teams in baseball record-wise. Let's talk about the performance of the general manager, Al Avila, because, quite frankly, I think everyone would agree that there are some guys who were obtained this offseason when a lot of people felt after last year's last-place finish the time was right to kind of rebuild. Mr. Ilitch said, no rebuild, let's just keep spending and get better players and make another run. And these better players cost an awful lot of money, and they're not all performing. And at the top of that list is Justin Upton. 6 years, $132 million. He's hitting .217. He's driven in 9 runs. This is a huge, huge disappointment, even though we're not yet into 2 months into this season.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, and that's been, and Brad was actually about it. I'm at the park right now. Brad was asked about this, you know, this afternoon pregame about as to why maybe Justin's still in the lineup, and you've got, you know, somebody like Stephen Moya, who's 6 for 15. Obviously, it's a small sample size, but you know, he's shown a little bit of power and a little pop so far, and why he's sitting on the bench. But I think Brad thinks that Justin's going to eventually step out of it. You know, he's shown a history of doing that. You know, he's a high strikeout guy, high strikeout hitter to begin with. They knew that when they signed him. I think he struck out a little bit more than they've even expected so far this year. But Brad mentioned this again yesterday. You know, he's seen bits and flashes from a guy like Upton. But you're right. You know, guys, they haven't been for Mark Lowe. Was another off-season acquisition that they got. He's been, you know, pretty bad this month out of the bullpen. You know, a couple of these late game blown opportunities from Tigers because of Lowe. So yeah, some of the off-season acquisitions, you know, aren't coming through right now. You know, in fact, aside from Jordan Zimmerman, I'd say none of them are. So it's an interesting situation. Al finds him in, and he's kind of in a quandary. You know, he's a guy who, he's, you know, this is his first year as general manager. He's got a manager who's on the final year of his contract. You know, he could make a move right now and decide to, you know, fire Brad like some people want. But then where do you go from there? You know, there's no really hot, flashy manager out there right now. You know, so I think Al, maybe it seems like he wants to ride with Bradford for at least, you know, right now. You know, I would say Brad's kind of on a week-to-week basis at this point. You know, if they string some wins together, it's going to help them. If they go on another losing streak like we saw, you know, last week, they went, you know, 2-5 on the road trip, he's going to be in a lot of trouble with them.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to Upton for a moment, he has struck out more than 40% of his at-bats thus far, and his numbers are very, very similar to Anthony Gose, who just made the trip from where you are to where we are, from Detroit to Toledo. He's with the Hens now, of course, being demoted. The difference being, though, they can't do that to Justin Upton. They can't even really take him out of the lineup, as you were talking about, because of that contract. He's going to have to earn it or be embarrass himself and hurt the club every time he strikes out the way he has performed. But you're right. You know, Mike Pelfrey's another one. Pelfrey signed a 2-year $16 million deal. He's 0-4 with a 5.80. Francisco Rodriguez is okay. He's got a 3.95 ERA thus far in his. Mark Lowe, you just went through, who's been terrible. And then who else are we missing as far as offseason acquisitions? Jordan, of course, has been the star. And Cameron Maben, who just made his debut because he was hurt. So he just came in last night. So all these, a lot of money spent in the offseason to go toward that $200 million plus. And if they don't start seeing some returns on this very, very soon, you know, you got to think, well, maybe you don't have to think. I'll ask you rather than tell you, and they'll let this be your final answer to the program this afternoon, Aaron. But do you think that Al Avila sticks with Brad Ausmus longer than perhaps he should or maybe he would want to? Because it was his decision to keep him. You know, when he took over, he had a decision to make. When he was handed the reins after they fired Dave Dombrowski, his decision was, I'm keeping Brad. And now if he fires him 2 months in, he's essentially saying, I made a bad decision. My first big move as general manager to keep this manager was the wrong one. Do you think he keeps him around longer just because he's got to prove himself right?
Yeah, you know, I think he does. In fact, I was asked this last night. I was walking on the stadium with another reporter, but, you know, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Brad lasts the remainder of the season. You know, after that, after this losing streak where they lost 11-12 and they struggled and he didn't get the axe, you know, I was a little surprised. And if you aren't one, you know, if they didn't decide to fire him then I would say maybe they'll ride with him for the rest of the season, see how it goes. I mean, you're not going to get much of a, you know, worse losing streak than they just went through. So, you know, at this point, if they didn't can him then I would be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he lasts the rest of the season.
Yeah, and it's a tough thing for him to be in, Al, that is, you know, because he wants to do well. Obviously, he's been handed the reins of power for this club. He's responsible for turning it into a winner, and part of that is maybe, you know, knowing when to admit you made a mistake and saying, I've got to make a change here and fix this thing before it gets out of hand, and they have a really long, slow summer in Detroit that leads to perhaps another last-place finish. Aaron McMahon, great job. He's been covering the Tigers for MLive.com. Aaron, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it, and we'll hope. You know what? If there's another Brad Ausmus blow up, I'm sure we'll talk to you again very soon to talk about it. All right?
Absolutely. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, brother. Good stuff. Appreciate it as always. That's it. We're out of time. Mike Miller's Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Go Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye bye.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances. And get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.